You are listening to the Better Together podcast, brought to you by the National Association of Free Will Baptists.
Welcome to the Better Together podcast, where we look for ways we can work together to advance the gospel of Jesus Christ. Today we have with us Pastor David Poteet. He pastors in Chicago, Illinois, the Northwest Community Church, and he and his wife, they actually went and started this church in Chicago all the way back in February of 1990. So, David, hey, thank you for taking the time to be with us today, my friend.
I'm honored to be here and humbled.
Hey, I remember you in college, and I remember you talking about going to Chicago and starting a church. You remember that, David?
I was pretty focused.
You were focused, and look, you went and you've done that. And I really think we can all learn some lessons from what you and your team have been able to accomplish in Chicago. And so I thank you for taking the time to be with us today to talk to us, my friend. One of the things, David, I want people to think about is how your church is located in what if folks have looked lately at the February-March issue of One Magazine, we talked about things to ponder. And so your church is located in what we refer to as a Metropolitan Four. That means there's over 5 million people that are living in that area. And then if we were to break it down and look at your Know Your Community report, you've got 66,167 people in a five-minute radius of Northwest Community Church. And so if you're listening today and you're in a Free Will Baptist church, less than 1% of Free Will Baptist churches are located in metropolitan areas of over 5 million people. So the first thing I think our listeners would want to hear from you is, what is it like to minister in such a metropolitan area?
It's interesting. And by interesting, some days there's a lot of trivial, mundane, daily routine. Traffic, the weather, the neighbors, the government, city politics. There's just a lot of things that are sort of ongoing. And that's what a lot of urban ministry is just the daily, the mundane, you just stick at it. That's what ministry in general is. But in the city, it is very often interesting. You never know what's going to come up and what opportunities are going to happen. In fact, when we host youth groups, I often tell them, we've got a schedule, and I can almost guarantee you we're not going to follow it completely, because usually something comes up and there's an opportunity to serve someone, or something happens that limits what we were going to do. City life is busier. Your time is compressed. And a big part of that is because of transportation. If you drive, it's going to take longer. And if you take public transportation, it's going to take longer. And by the way, that's one of the reasons, main reasons, that urban people are always in a hurry. Mm-hmm. We assume when we're going to go somewhere, something's going to go wrong. Mm-hmm. If you're on the bus, it's the driver's either going to be late, or you'll just miss the next bus. You'll transfer from one to the other, and you can see the one you need pulling off as you get off the first one. Or construction, or an accident, or some, important person's in town and they block off the whole expressway. So that's a part of it. As far as the church, one of the challenges that we've had is a lot of people in the city, they don't want to be in the city. They're here because they were born here. They're here because they almost somewhat feel trapped in some way. And once they get in a place in life where they could afford to move, or they get an opportunity, they very often take off. So that's one of the challenges we've had, is of people that we've won, of getting them to stay and help us reach more. We intentionally moved to this area in Chicago, by the way, where people from the South do not locate, because we wanted to make sure that we built a church that was more indigenous. Back in the 80s, I pastored a church in Northern Illinois, a far, far distant, if it's even considered a suburb of Chicago, called Joliet. And the church in the 60s and 70s was running in the hundreds. And when I went there to pastor it in February of 82, there were 19 people there the first Sunday. Mm. What had happened is a lot of people from the South had moved up, planted that church. But then when that generation retired or moved back home or passed away or whatever, the church was just left hanging on. And so that experience shaped, when we came to Chicago, how we ended up where we're at. People from the South do not intentionally move to our neighborhood.
So you have real Chicagoans, we would say.
Yes.
Born and bred, really urban environment. We talk about 65,000 people in what they term a 5-minute drive, but that depends on the traffic.
Yes.
And so many people are taking buses, taking trains. It's a whole different environment than what most of our people encounter. However, the environment that you're ministering in some ways, we see that environment becoming going throughout the country. So some of the things you've learned, some of the things you're doing are the kinds of things that would help many of our churches, wherever they may be located.
If I could just interject, when we first came here in 1990, this area was had a predominantly Polish and Polish American influence.
Mm-hmm.
And as that demographic was moving northwest, you know, we started in my living room, we rented a union hall for several years, and then we bought the building we have now. As that demographic was moving northwest, each of those steps took us a little bit, just a mile or two each time, southeast. And so the Hispanic population was growing as the Polish was diminishing. So we realized fairly early on, especially in 2000 when we bought this building, that we're going to have to really work on reaching that demographic. And as far as it being in other parts of the country, I had a very interesting experience probably 25 years ago in a small town in a southern state that will remain nameless, when I was in a missions conference and had a service on a Sunday morning. The pastor took me out of a small town. If I remember right, it was maybe 3,000 or 4,000, not a large town at all, and went out to eat after lunch. And as I was talking about reaching Hispanics and other people in our neighborhood, this pastor said, "Well, you know, that's all well and good, but we don't have any of those people around here." Mm. And I am not making this up. Right when he said it, behind the counter in the kitchen, there was an argument.
Oh, no.
Loud.
Yeah.
And one of them threw a pot or something, and it hit the floor, and it was loud, and the whole place got quiet. And they were arguing in Spanish.
Oh, wow.
I calmly looked around, and I'm surprised I said it, but calmly looked around and said, "They're here. Maybe we're just not looking for them."
That was good. Oh, my, David. Good job. So that's what's happened. The world is coming to our doorsteps, and people from all over the world are coming to us. And it creates different challenges, though, because some of them don't have really resources. Some of them haven't grown up in church and are not used to giving and so forth. So it creates a different dynamic, doesn't it, than like maybe even the pastor you were with that day, as far as able to support the church. And so with the changing environment in churches, you know, a lot of them have looked at Jay Moon's Mints model as a way to engage the community and as a way to support themselves. Our listeners may not be aware of that. They could go and look at nafwb.org/mints and learn about that. But that whole Mints model of impacting your community, you guys have been doing that for a while, haven't you?
Quite a bit of it. I was surprised. And by the way, I too recommend that people look at the Mints model. I think there's tremendous value to it. And especially in the decades to come, as we look at losing our tax exempt status, which is a whole different category or discussion, a whole different discussion. So first of all, we've made mistakes. Anyone who tries this stuff, you're going to make mistakes, but you learn and you overcome and you move forward. And secondly, I am not the urban guru here. I'm just a guy who God led up here, and we're doing the best we can with what we've got. So in our over the years, and we started most of this after we bought this building in 2000. Although in 1992, our first major outreach event, we rented a local Park District field house and did a seminar on how to get out of debt, primarily credit card debt.
Okay.
Background in business, and you know, have helped people with budgeting and so on, and so things like that. We still do things like that now, but we've increased that, and so we've partnered with different agencies. And when you partner with agencies, you enter into these agreements, and you just have to know ahead of time where you're going to draw your lines.
Mm-hmm.
And, if it's okay, a little bit later, I'll talk about philosophy of ministry. But so we've done different. Oh, I'm sorry, I lost my. So we've done different partnerships with agencies. We did an after-school program for a number of years that was funded by a secular agency. And when we first started to enter into it, I was like, this could be a problem, because you don't know what they're going to teach. You don't know what activities they're going to have, you know, what their worldview is. And a Christian lawyer in Chicago said, well, you tell me everything you want. And he actually did this for us for free. That was good.
Yes.
He said, you tell us everything you're concerned about. We'll put it in a contract. And then you give it to them. And if they don't like it, they'll negotiate. And you just have to know where you draw the lines. I was surprised, because it was a 4-page contract, and it was very specific, and on worldview issues especially. And I knew this agency is not on the same page with us.
Mm-hmm.
And they agreed to it without any changes whatsoever, which gave us total control over the content. And that was a good program, because there was some funding with it, and it helped us with expenses. That agency's funding got canceled, and so we tried to keep it going with volunteers, but we ended up, we kept it going about a year and a half, and we ended up really almost burning some people out, and unfortunately we had to end it. Mm-hmm. So just a quick list, we've partnered with two different organizations to offer citizenship classes, and these are classes that help people navigate the process of immigration and getting into the pipeline to take the test. And especially it helps them to practice and be ready to take the test, which, by the way, I've listened to the test, and I don't know if I, I know I wouldn't get 100%. Let me put it that way.
It'd be kind of difficult, can't it?
Yes. We also partnered with the City Colleges of Chicago to offer ESL classes. And a lot of these things that I mentioned, when COVID hit, it just all ended. And so right now we're not doing as much. We are doing citizenship classes again, but we're not doing the English classes. And we still would love to do the after school program. But it's a sizable commitment of someone here to be with the building, you know, who's not paid. And I can't commit to that, because I'm the pastor. I never know when I'm going to get to be, you know, called to an emergency or something, a hospital, whatever. So anyway, there are several other social service agencies in the neighborhood that we've partnered with. We've hosted community safety meetings when there's been shootings. We've hosted things with the police department. We have hosted some local beat meetings, you know, our police beat, but they're currently held somewhere else. We're a polling place when it comes election time, and we're very fortunate because our parking lot and our building is all ground level. There's not a stair in the whole parking lot or facility, so that makes it easy for us. We've partnered with Lurie's Children's Hospital to do different events as far as health. We've hosted blood drives. We did an immigration workshop with World Relief, and we always try to do everything free. And so far we've been able to, and World Relief brought some lawyers, and to help offset the cost, they were giving the lawyers, they were not paying them scale, but they wanted to give them something. So it was going to cost us $50 a person for this, or cost the people $50 each. And So I got together with a couple of businesses close by that I knew were sensitive to these issues, as well as some people in our church. And we decided to just raise the $50 a person ourselves. So we were able to offer it free for them. In Chicago, our city councilmen are called aldermen, or alder people now. And we've partnered with them a lot of things during COVID. We were the first place in the entire city to offer vaccinations when the COVID vaccine came out. They used our facility. I take that back. We were not the first place to offer the vaccine, but we were, once it was approved for children, we were the first place to offer a children's vaccination. Mm-hmm. And what has happened is word has gotten out as you get involved in the community and people begin to know you're available and willing. We were actually approached by a couple of these agencies, and now most of the time they approach us and say, hey, we're thinking of doing this, we're thinking of doing that. You know, would you guys be open to hosting this? And we have a process we go through, because we won't host anything that contradicts our values and practices as a Free Will Baptist Church. I'm rambling. Is that too much?
Okay, but so you're doing a lot of different things, and our listeners may think, oh, well, why would you do that? And so tell us a little bit about what has been some of the benefit of these partnerships, how it ends up helping with the spreading of the gospel.
It has increased our relational visibility.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of people that might not have ever even been here, but they know we're here. Because a lot of these things get advertised in various ways. Especially now with social media, these last several years now, there's a Facebook page for our community that has become sort of like the hub of all knowledge for Belmont Craigan. That's the name of our community, our neighborhood. It's just one very small neighborhood in the whole city of Chicago. It's not a suburb. I just want to make that clear.
Yes, not a suburb. Not a suburb.
It has given us that increased visibility of people knowing we're here. And it's also increased our credibility and our relational capital. Mm-hmm. People see us doing these things, and they see us as a safer place than what they might have otherwise. You know, being a Free Will Baptist Church in the city, we're often viewed as maybe not a cult, but in that direction.
Yeah.
And, doing these things has helped people to see, hey, these guys are for real. They care about the community. They're doing something.
And it gives you credibility. I mean, if you've got aldermen, you're a polling site. So we'll often say to a church, if your church closed tomorrow, would the community miss you? And it's a big yes. This community would definitely miss you. You got into this a little bit, but what are the things, kind of like, what's your philosophy of ministry about what you will get involved in and what you wouldn't?
Well, this also would be the starting point that I would recommend for anybody considering getting into this kind of thing in these types of partnerships. You've got to start, in my opinion, you've got to start with a biblical philosophy of ministry instead of a pragmatic philosophy of ministry.
Good.
Because if you don't, you'll be tempted to gauge the wrong thing as success. And if you're not careful, you can become dependent on funding or dependent on, hey, we're doing this. And then you get to where, well, maybe we're crossing a line and you pull back. And then when the numbers go down, you begin to think, oh no, we're failing. Success in ministry is not numbers. It's not number of events. It's not how many partnerships we have. Success in ministry is faithfulness. And that's why the philosophy of ministry has to be biblically based. So our biblical philosophy of ministry is based on the Great Commandment and the Great Commission. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength. Love your neighbor as yourself. Go into the world and preach the gospel to everyone. Everything we do needs to fall under one of those two the Great Commandment and the Great Commission. Sometimes you do something as a Christian just because it's the right thing to do, and it's not going to result in any growth or any, you're not going to reach anybody. It's just the right thing to do. This is the Christian life. That's success. That's faithfulness. And sometimes you'll be taken of and advantaged, taken advantage of and used, and that's all right. It's going to happen, but as you gain experience, it doesn't happen as much. And it's a balance between doing the Great Commandment and the Great Commission. And some people who are outside the church think it's a bait and switch. There are people, even now, 33 years into this, that think our goal is to just get them in here so that we can preach to them. Don't tell anybody, but that is our goal.
Yeah.
But you can honestly do both with a clear conscience.
Right.
You honestly can. So when we partnered with the city colleges for ESL classes, they told us, and by the way, we had to accept their contract or it wasn't going to happen. They didn't even look at ours because city colleges is a big multi-million-dollar deal, and they didn't really need us, but they were looking for satellite locations. They actually approached us, by the way, and asked if we'd be willing. So they told us, look, when these students are here, you can't preach at them. You can't proselyte them. You can't whatever. So we said, okay, this is a high enough value. Our first registration, we had to literally lock the door. The demand was so high, and we had people on their knees with tears begging us to let them in. And we had to go along with what the city said, but my train crashed. Where was I headed with this?
So you're talking about, you know, they're saying you can't proselytize.
Oh, yes.
That.
Yes.
And so, but yet you get a lot of people in your building is where you were going.
Yes. So walking in our building, we always have flyers in the lobby for our events. And when the students take break, they come out and stand and they're drinking coffee or whatever. And they're looking at the flyers. And what really pleased me is that at the end of the class, the semester, they would have a party. And they would ask me to come in for the party to eat with them. And they would have potluck, and it was really good food. But they would ask me to pray.
Mm-hmm.
And then just mingling with people, we constantly would just mention to people. And they would ask about the church, and we would answer. We didn't initiate it always, but we would answer, and we would invite.
Yes.
But we're not a hard sell in your face. So it was never an issue. The city never had a problem with us doing that.
Let's unpack that a little bit, David. So you said sometimes you do things just because it's the right thing to do.
Yes.
Clearly a need. If you've got people that you've got more people that want this than can get it, people begging to get in, and the city's like, nope, that's as many as can come in. It's a great need for the community. They say to you, you can't proselytize, but they're in your building. And so now, you know, so many people don't want to go to church. They don't know what it's going to be like. They're comfortable with your building. They've been there. They're looking at all your information that's all up on the walls. And, you know, it's your building. Come in and pray over the food. And you just pray, well, this guy must know something about God. And they ask you questions, ask you about church. That's really what you're talking about doing, isn't it?
It's happened several times, and it will happen again in the future. It's happened often enough that we know that that's going to happen.
That's good stuff, buddy.
And part of our philosophy is we get them in the door for something.
Yes.
More likely to get them back in the door for something else.
Yeah. So you're just keeping them coming into the church, being aware of the church, and looking for opportunities to share the gospel with them.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is, and that's the economic part, which you're mentioning, we can't let that be that's what you talk about, a philosophy of ministry, right? Mm-hmm. That we're doing things biblically, but it is helping you to keep the doors open of the church and to be able to minister in this community.
It has in the past. I have to be honest right now, the partnerships we have are not producing any income.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's part of, sometimes it costs you as a church. You know, right now with our citizenship class, our partnership is there's nothing being given to us. So it's going to cost us a little extra in utilities and, you know, paper supplies and so on. But we see that as a high enough value that, yeah, this is something we want to do. And we've had some success with seeing people attend our services as a result of these things. But it usually is they come for one of these things, and then over time, they may come to some of our kids' events, or they may come to something else. And then over time, we start to see, you know, we can see some people coming. And I don't want to be misrepresentative here. It's not like we've grown to thousands of people through all of this. Mm-hmm. So there's balance doing the great commandment that's there, whether it's effective in reaching people or not. And this is why I don't see this as a bait and switch that churches are often accused of, because we are genuinely glad of the hundreds, even thousands of people we've served over these three decades. We see that as the right thing to do. We're glad we did it. Do we wish we would have reached more? Obviously.
Mm-hmm.
So you balance that. And then with the Great Commission, you look for those opportunities and use these as God opens the doors.
But so many churches are in places that the community never enters or never has any contact with the pastor. And if nothing else, this is a way for that to happen. And you have had some folks who have come all the way and get involved in some of your services and so forth. So I'm listening in and I'm thinking, my church is kind of one of those closed churches that they talk about the Mintz model, where we don't have a lot of relationships with people within the community. And maybe they're thinking a little bit about trying to do some things like this so people are aware of them and create opportunities for them to fulfill the Great Commandment and the Great Commission. What kinds of things do you recommend for churches that are considering developing these types of relationships?
Some are going to hear what I'm about to say, the first suggestion, and you're going to say, well, sure, he's going to say that. Pray.
Yeah.
Pray for opportunities.
Yeah.
Literally, pray for opportunities. But you have to be willing to go in those doors when those opportunities come up. So that's the first, honestly, pray. Secondly, get involved in your community. Get outside the walls of your church and outside your church family.
Mm-hmm.
Most towns, suburbs, even in large cities, you know, there's the Chamber of Commerce, the big boys downtown, mm-hmm. but there's also local chambers of commerce. And so one of the first things we did when we bought our building here was join the local Chamber of Commerce, police district meetings, going to school board meetings, going to community meetings, just all of these things that are already going on, go to them.
Mm-hmm.
And become a part of what's happening. Don't go there to preach to them. You really need to go as a learner.
Mm-hmm.
And we definitely had to here. I had no idea. I mean, I grew up in and around Chicago, so I had a lot of idea. But once I began looking at it from the perspective of reaching and serving this neighborhood, I had a sharp learning curve, and I'm still learning today.
Mm-hmm.
So you pray. And when those opportunities open, you go into them, you go in those doors, you look for opportunities, ask around, are there ways our church could serve our neighborhood? Be willing to change, to try something different. You know, there was an Amazon before there was an Amazon.
Oh,
it was called Sears.
Yes, it was, wasn't it?
Sears Catalog Company.
Yeah.
Right. That was how they got started. And then they moved to stores, and then the internet hit, and Sears, with their history, should have been Amazon.
Yeah.
But they didn't have the vision. They had the background, they had the history, but they didn't have the vision. And now they're virtually out of business. So you got to be willing to try something different. Fourth, you need to have a heart for the city, for your city.
Mm-hmm.
Luke 19:41 is a just a driving verse in my soul. When Jesus came near to Jerusalem, this is a conglomeration of several translations, but I want to give you the nuance. When Jesus came near the city and he beheld the city,
mm-hmm.
He wept over it.
Mm.
You need a heart for your city. And if your heart is for your city, it leads to the fifth thing, and that is be faithful, be willing to stay.
That's good.
We are now reaping results of relationships that we built over the past 33 years. We're starting to see more of that. And even individuals, people that we met, we have someone recently who we was attending our church, I think it was over 20 years ago, and we lost touch. Different things happened in her life, and several months ago, she started coming back, and she is just growing like a weed, and it's a joy to see. So we see the analogy of baseball pitchers, you know, some are starters, some are mid relief, some are closers. Of course, all of us want to be whole game, complete game pitchers, right? We want to do it all.
Right.
But we also realize, you know, I talked about people that once they get on their feet, they have opportunity, they'll move. If we had all of the people that we have reached and led to faith in Christ still here in Chicago, just the Chicagoans, we would have a church full. So our success is not, first of all, it's faithfulness, but it's not always visible. And there are people serving in other churches around the country, especially in Northern Illinois and unfortunately Wisconsin. It's a Green Bay Packer thing with me. So you can edit that out if you need to. Sorry. But anyway, they did vow when they went that they would not become Packer fans. So
and they probably haven't, David. They're probably sticking to it, buddy.
So last thought, just real quick, there is no substitute for personal evangelism. None. So with all that we've done, the way people are still reached for Christ is primarily through one person telling another person, one person inviting another person. And as these relationships are built through all these partnerships that we have, it still takes someone talking one-on-one with someone else, inviting them, encouraging them, helping them to consider Christ.
So the programs are great. They're a means of getting people in the doors, a way of people noticing the church. But at the end of the day, we've got to tell other people about Jesus Christ and be prepared and ready to do that. And I like the way you opened with it. Pray, and the Lord's going to open opportunities, and he's going to show us what we need to do, isn't he? You mentioned earlier some of the pitfalls, like being more concerned maybe about, you know, resources and or so forth, and having a biblical worldview. Are there other things churches need to be thinking of to avoid pitfalls in this area?
It is a marathon. And so I've got a unique take on this, because most of the people who encourage people to be steady, in all honesty, they're really encouraging them to be slow. But understand, it is a marathon. So it's not a 100-yard sprint. But understand that the marathon, the elite runners who win these marathons, like the Chicago Marathon, the Boston Marathon, they average under 5-minute miles. They're not just sitting around. It is a marathon, but you got to get with it.
Yeah.
And so you want to be careful that you don't burn out. You've got to find something that helps you pace yourself. And pun intended, I guess, with all of this, is my outlet has been running.
Yeah.
I just love to run. And I have never been a pastor that takes a day of the week off. But before everybody, you know, gets on to me for that, my early morning workout is, that's my Sabbath. And I get it every day. And it just does something for me. And what you've got to find is your outlet and your place where you can find that refreshing that will keep you going, because it is a marathon. And you need a team. There are very few of our pastors, I think, that could be both an effective pastor to their people and the CEO of a nonprofit, if they add a nonprofit to their mix. I'm not one of them. Several years ago, we did have a window that I think we missed. And this is one of the things I'd do over and take my own advice. When God opens the door, you go into it. And I allowed ourselves ourself, our team at the time, I allowed us to be talked out of it. And I regret that to this day. Because once these other things start growing, they will limit you in how you can really serve and be there for your people, to visit them, to counsel them, to pray for them, to prepare for sermons and teaching and all of that. So you need a team. And when you go to build a team, you need to have your philosophy of ministry nailed down and let them know this is non-negotiable before they come. We've been blessed. We have a couple of families, one from Alabama, one from Oklahoma, actually one and a half from Oklahoma. And as they started considering coming here to be a part of our work, I had a list, I had it written out, and I'd give it to them. And I would say, this is non-negotiable. If you can't minister in this paradigm, then let's not create a problem, because we got to do what we got to do to reach our people. And that's true. You know, we can't do what we're doing here to reach cities and towns in Alabama or different things, but the gospel never changes. And so you need to pace yourself, find what your Sabbath is, find a rhythm. You need a team, and you need to have a heart for the city, because the temptation to quit will come for most people. And I'm going to be upfront with you. I've not faced that. And part of the reason is because Chicago is home. It's home. And far too often, one of the reasons a lot of our churches have struggled in the North is getting pastors to come and stay for a long time. Look at our churches that are really making a difference. And it's usually because there's been a pastor who's stayed there and gutted it out. And now he's reaping the fruit, and the church is reaping the fruit. So have a heart for your city. And once you're there, don't quit.
That's great. A good word. So pastor needs to stay. People need to stay. Got to have people like that to give you continuity over time to truly reach the city. Well, David, lastly, you are a missionary, really. When we think about all the people in your area, and you're really working with different cultures, in many ways, you probably encounter a more diverse group of people in a day than most Free Will Baptists do, maybe even a whole year or more. So what can we do to support you and other churches like you in these big metropolitan areas?
In the immense presentation that you gave at the National Convention, which I have watched three times, you mentioned
Bless you.
There may be areas, and this is also in the resources available, you know, the Mintz book that is a PDF and all of that, that there may be areas overlooked if we only consider financial viability. And many urban church planters and church work, urban ministries, need to partner with well-resourced churches from other parts of the country.
Yes.
And I say that with hesitation, because I often feel like, man, we're 33 years into this. You know, we should be able to do what we want when we want. We're, you know, we should be a mature church. And in many ways we are, but with resources, it's always a struggle in an urban ministry or a ministry in a area where poverty or immigration is high. And we have that throughout our denomination, in smaller mid-sized towns or small towns where there's just a really not a lot of resourced, well-resourced people there to reach and then see them fund the church. So one thing for churches to seriously consider is calling up a church in these situations and saying, look, we've been praying about this. We'd like to talk with you about what a partnership might look like. There needs to be accountability. Don't just throw money at us. There needs to be accountability, because when you start doing these things, I've found in a lot of these nonprofits, there's a lot of waste.
Yeah.
A lot of ineffectiveness. But, you know, the program's going, so we must be doing something right. So there needs to be accountability. But urban churches, they need to know someone's standing with them long term. It would be so easy for us to slip into a survivalist mentality and a fortress mentality, and we've just got to keep this thing going and not risk spending the money to try something new. And you've got to try something new, or you're going to end up like Sears. The message never changes. I know that. That's where the biblical philosophy of ministry comes in. You nail it down before you start and answer that ahead of time. They're not quitting. Nail it down before you start. And then when you run into stuff, the question isn't, well, do I fudge on what I believe or do I quit? No, I've already answered that. Now I figure out within biblical parameters, what do I do next? Because I'm not quitting and I'm not going to compromise. And I guess the last thing I would ask is for people who are doing this, don't criticize us.
Yes.
I find it interesting that doing what the New Testament church did is controversial to some people today. They took care of the poor. They had a huge benevolent ministry. One of the things that attracted unbelievers to the church was the way they took care of the poor, the way they took discarded babies on the street, and the way they did a lot of these things.
Yeah.
Timothy talks about caring for widows. James talks about it. So to put this in contemporary language, Jesus in Matthew 25 talked about a food pantry, providing fresh well water, an immigration ministry, because when it says I was a stranger and you took me in, the word that's used for stranger means the foreigner, the alien, the immigrant. So there's a food pantry, fresh well water, immigration ministry, a clothes closet, a medical ministry, and a prison ministry. That's what what Jesus expected of the New Testament church.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to have these ministries, not just to say, hey, we have these ministries, but because we genuinely care about the people. They're not just a project or a notch on our spiritual belt. So, I'm hesitant to say this about me, but for others that are trying these things and doing what they can to serve people and to reach people, please don't criticize them until you've walked a mile in their shoes.
Absolutely. Good
assume,
job.
Assume the best. These are your brothers and sisters in Christ. Trust them.
That's good. And it's really a 1 Corinthians 9 thing, kind of putting yourself in the shoes, of other people. And you can look at maps, you can look at demographics, and you can see all kinds of things, how different so many of the contexts are that people are ministering in. And you're saying, hey, we're trying to do Matthew 25 here. We're trying to do what Jesus said we're supposed to do.
Yes.
Help us and sure understand that this is important. We're trying to get the word to folks in a quite different context. Well, thank you, David. You've shared so much good information with us today. And so if folks want to learn more from you, is it okay if they reach out to you and email you?
Oh, yes. Yes. It's a long email, but easy. David@northwestcommunity.net.
So don't forget that email is David@northwestcommunity.net. I encourage you to, we've got prayer lists as church. I encourage you to put churches like the one that David's pastoring, churches like some of ours in California, some of ours in some of these big metropolitan areas, Salem, Seattle, Washington. If you'll notice, we try to highlight a church every Wednesday, and many times it'll be in these high metropolitan areas. Pray for these churches. And, if you send some resources their way, you're ministering to people that have often never heard the gospel before. So think about and pray about if that's something that you would like to do. And David, you guys entertain E-Team and missions trips from time to time as well, don't you? So that would be an option for many of our churches.
Mm-hmm. We'd be glad to host you. Call us.
Well, thank you for joining us today, David. We appreciate you, and we appreciate the work you're doing.
You're welcome, and you keep up the good work too, Brother Moody.
Thank you, sir. And look, we thank you all of you that are listening today. We want to encourage you to take this podcast, share it with someone that you think would benefit from it. Every little thing we do, it really does matter, but it really does make a difference when we all come together and we work together. We are better together.